Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network where we discuss legal and current events in a roundtable discussions with legal minds, community activists, professionals, we have entertainers, we just have a wide array of people who work with legal and current events in our community. On this show, we discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So our guest tonight will not make those excuses for conduct, which is often really a distraction from the truth. Sometimes it's racist. Sometimes it is, just really our own need to make our own communities decent and safe places to live. But what we're really looking at is not to be distracted from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am the host of A Time for Justice. And I would like to thank you all for listening and tuning in tonight. We're going to talk about the topic doing good in the community and helping those who are battling against substance abuse. Substance abuse, yes, that is a really big issue that we want to talk about, but we're going to start off and we're going to end up with talking about the doing of good in the community. As we all know that we have just concluded Ramadan, and I am so thankful to Allah for bringing me through the Ramadan process, and it is a privilege and an honor, and I just owe Allah so many, thanking him. I cannot thank him enough for bringing me and having me a part of a community that has taught me Islam in the practice. And I thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I thank the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I do thank those of you all who have listened to A Time for Justice, and I, feel like we are family as we sometimes look at these legal issues and walk away with our desire to be more enlightened and with the ability to serve our people. So again, I'm just thankful, and I'm just so thankful, and I feel really good after Ramadan. So again, doing good in the community and helping those who are battling against substance abuse. So I want to go ahead and open up the mic. I want to make sure I see one of our special guest, and I'm not sure if the other one has arrived. So please press the number one to get into the host queue because I'm going to go ahead and open up the mics. So first off, I want to bring up our sister. I'm so very excited that Sister Mavis Muhammad is our guest tonight. And Sister Mavis is a licensed chemical dependency counselor. She is a certified anger resolution therapist and mental health professional who possesses a Bachelor of Science in psychology. Her passion is helping people, and she believes it is also her God-given purpose in life. Sister Mavis has served in this capacity for over 20 years and is an advocate for individuals to care for their mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical health. She has provided services to diverse populations, including those incarcerated. Sister Mavis is currently developing an online presence under her own business, Overcomers Life Solutions, LLC, to offer various components for navigating and overcoming life struggles. Sister Mavis is a registered member and a proud MGT of the Nation of Islam at Muhammad Mosque No. 45 in Houston, Texas, under Regional Student Minister Dr. Abdul Halim Muhammad. So, Sister Mavis, I'm going to go ahead and open up your mic and just welcome you to the show. Let me see. Sister Mavis.
Yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum. Yes, ma'am. I can hear you well. And thank you.
Good.
Thank you so much for coming on and being a special guest tonight.
Well, first, I would like to thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to share, yes, ma'am, on these important topics tonight.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
Thank you as well.
Yes, ma'am. It is critical to our times and where we are at this point in, discussion of important things.
Yes, ma'am. Well, and I'm going to go ahead and open up this mic, and I'm going to see if this is our other special guest. Let's see. Is Brother K. Reno, is he on the line? Brother K. Reno?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, Brother K. Reno. Wanted to make sure. Yes, sir.
Yes,
so let me go ahead and... Yes, you're in the building. That's right. That is right. Praises be to Allah. So let me give everybody a little background on Brother K. Reno. Because, you know, he's really like a big star, okay? I just want to say that, and I'm always so excited and humbled that he would take the time to speak with us. So, Brother Eric Kaiser, and he is better known by his stage name, K. Reno. He is a rapper in Houston, based out of Houston, let's say. And he, I'm always pulling things offline, but he's founded an organization called the South Park Coalition. He's often described as one of the pioneers of Southern hip-hop. Brother K. Reno has been, I believe, rapping for over 35 years, and he is described by some as being a longtime advanced conscious MC, just doing some wonderful things. I've seen that he did 50 albums in 40 years, and one time that I saw that headline, not sure if it's true, but, you know, just a very, very prolific and well-sought-after entertainer and really a community contributor. Our brother has a K. Reno Radio, and he can be found on YouTube at K. Reno Radio. Brother K. Reno also can be found on kpft.org, that's 90.1. And he's always talking about some subjects that are very important and very, serious to help young people and old people and all of us. So I just love Brother K. Reno. You can find him on Twitter at The Real K. Reno. And I do know that Brother K. Reno is very active in the United in Peace initiatives here at Mosque 45, which is a collaboration of those in the city working to make our communities decent and safe places to live. So Brother K. Reno can tell us more about himself, of course, but those are some of the things that I was able to collect. So once again, Brother K. Reno, thank you so much for tuning in and being a special guest.
No, thank y'all so much. Thank you, Sister Pamela, for having me on. I'm always honored, and we just appreciate the contributions that you are making to make us all better and to bring awareness through this platform. So I appreciate being invited on the show.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Praise be to Allah. And so all of us on this line are coming from Ramadan. So y'all heard me get the Ramadan spirit, the Ramadan energy that comes from 30 days of sacrifice. And did anyone else have any input they wanted to just add on how you feel renewed or otherwise after Ramadan? Yeah. So
yes, ma'am. If I could,
go right ahead, sis.
I had the most productive and successful Ramadan that I have ever had since becoming a registered member of the Nation of Islam. And talk about renewed, I have a renewed outlook on myself, first and foremost, and life situations. I mean, during Ramadan, Allah blessed me to be able to hold on to my peace in the midst of whatever chaos might have been going on. And that, to me, was the greatest gift that I could have ever gotten from Ramadan. Because holding on to my peace, and I remember one of the student ministers, I think it was Brother Carlos, at the beginning said, don't let anything upset your Ramadan. And I took that with and ran with it. And my Ramadan was excellent. It has been, I can say that I am a different, better Muslim woman than I was when I started Ramadan, now that it's over.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, and so, Brother K. Reno, if you wanted to make a comment, you could on that. I can jump right into, your part, your main part, I think to headline with you is this issue about the doing of good in the community. Because as I talked to you a couple days ago, I love the fact that you see rappers such as Travis Scott. It was an article in The Final Call where he talked about using his resources and platform moving forward towards actionable changes. There was also today's Final Call. Actually, there's an article about Parchman Prison that everybody needs to really read. We talked about that subject last week on Parchman Prison and the horrors and the abuse and the neglect of inmates. But one of the real initiatives that shed light on the abuse was a lawsuit filed by our brother Sean Jay-Z Carter. And as we know, he's the hip-hop mogul, and he's, and another rapper, Yo Gotti, Team Rock for Social Justice. And as a result, this legal action is really helping to shed light on these 152 inmates actually have been represented. So I think when I think about those type of things, Brother K. Reno, those type of initiatives, that type of doing the good, I think about you. Because you were, in my opinion, doing it before it was popular. But, because you've always been a conscious person with positive. And so now with your YouTube channels and, so much else that you do, can you talk to us about what you think is that important for you all to lend your support?
Yes, ma'am. Well, for me personally, when you think about the gift of music that I've been blessed with, that Allah blessed me with, when you start off, you're just doing music. You're just having fun, just doing the art form that you love. But as I started to mature just as a person, as a man, and you start to become aware of what's going on around you in everyday life, going on in the world, going on within your community, and whether it be injustices, whether it be poverty, whether it be drug problems, any type of problems, family problems, you start to use the music as a means to relay a message. You use that to say, okay, I have this platform. Long before social media, I have this platform that I can use where I can make songs that can change people's lives for the better if I relay it the proper way. And that was my wake-up moment, my light bulb moment. But to give credit where it's due, there were so many other artists that came before me, like Public Enemy, like KRS-One, and different artists who were already advanced in terms of dropping knowledge on records. And that was another seed that was planted in me, like, okay, well, you know, you don't just have to rap about how good you can rap. You don't just have to rap about the party or whatever it is you're talking about, and even the nonsense that I've talked about. You can also try to save people through the music. So I point to the music as being the key component that made the difference in terms of bringing my understanding of how important it is to put messages in that music. But then after you do that, you can't just be a person that's just talking about it or rapping about it. You also have to be seen out in the community doing whatever it is that you are either saying needs to be done or that you are telling other people that they need to do. You need to be found doing it too.
Hmm. Sir, that's beautiful. And Brother K. Reno, before we go into this community and some of the issues that we want to discuss that are problems in our community, tell us a bit about you and your brand. You know, because I just be chopping it all up. But tell us who K. Reno is as an artist and give us some of, you know, the high points so we know, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am. I'm just a brother who fell in love with rap music at the age of, well, really before the age of 13. I started writing at 13, but I started listening to rap probably in around 79 or 80 when the Sugar Hill Gang and all that came out. So I just fell in love with it. My first love was football. I thought I was going to be a football player, but I always been skinny, so I wasn't tall as I am now, but I was skinny, and so I didn't make the team. So when I didn't make the team in high school, I decided to focus all my attention on the music, and I'm glad I did that because I just believe that was what I was meant to do. And I just heard this recently. I didn't know this all these decades, but I heard Mr. Farrakhan talk about the blessing of knowing your purpose, finding out your purpose, and actually living it. So when I heard that, like, man, I guess I was doing it all along and didn't realize it. But, you know, I always just wanted to try to excel in the music, but I also wanted to be a presence in terms of building up, being a building block to contributing to the city of Houston being known for rap music, because I can just remember a time where we were not known for rap music and were not even respected as being legitimate artists. So it took people like Scarface and Willie D and the Ghetto Boys and just different artists to come along, and then we came along shortly after that with South Park Coalition, and, you know, we just proud to say that, you know, anything that represents or reflects Houston on a whole, we part of that foundation too.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. And just one last thing, I think is so important that people know your ability to live your principles in your music and, you know, uplift the community when that's what you're doing. That has a lot to do with the fact that you're an independent artist, right? You're somewhat independent. Can you explain for me what that kind of has looked like for you?
Yes, ma'am. It's another one of those blessings that I didn't really see coming in the beginning. I was just like anybody else when I started out. I was trying to make a demo tape and send it out to the big major labels to try to get a record deal just like everybody else, trying to be like Run-DMC and LL and all them. But in the early days, we received rejection letters from those labels, mainly, in my opinion, because we just were not 100% developed as artists yet. We weren't ready yet. But later on, when I knew for a fact that I was developed and ready as an artist, my focus had turned. So now I wasn't just rapping about this little frivolous stuff. Now I was talking about the teachings in my rap. I was mentioning Mr. Farrakhan in my rap. So still sending, not putting it all together, I'm still sending out demos to these labels. And now the rejection letters are for a different reason, because I'm making records that are condemning the very people that I'm trying to get to sign me. So it was like, nah, that's not going to work. So independence was kind of forced upon us, I guess we could say, because we weren't allowed on that big stage, that so-called big stage. But looking at it now, it was the best thing that could happen, because the way the climate is now, you see so many, not just rappers, but entertainers and athletes that get caught up in this little zone where they are afraid to speak the truth. They're afraid to walking on eggshells because they're afraid to speak against the establishment, even when the establishment is wrong. And what independence has allowed me to do, it took away any type of hesitation for me. Whatever's on my mind to say, I'm going to say it, because I don't have nobody that's going to tell me, well, nah, you can't put that on the album, or nah, you know, don't say that. And nobody can check me and make me apologize for saying something that, number one, I know is the truth, or number two, I just felt strongly in my heart to say, I'm one of the free Negroes out here.
Praise be to Allah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So that's beautiful, and so that brings us dovetailing into our one of our main topics also tonight, which is battling against substance abuse, helping those who are battling against substance abuse. And I think it ties in because, as you were saying, when you sing or not sing or rap or communicate about some of the issues in our community, we know that substance abuse is one of the big ones. And really, it's so interesting, when I talked to Sister Mavis, I thought about Sister Mavis as a substance abuse counselor. And then we also have the April 17th words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that I just feel like they were so important when I heard them. When he spoke to the Thai youth group, those children were so blessed, you know, to be on the line with the minister. I don't know if everybody got a chance to hear it, but I know you can go to Brother Abdul Qiyam's Facebook page and see it or hear it. And this, in this message, it was a prayer line on April the 17th, and the minister talked about drugs in his message to them. He told them that they would become, that they, you know, he really, and I want to say it specifically, he said, to the youth that are on this line, you must not allow yourself to fall victim to the enemy, who knows that this is the rise, our rise. And he said, to the young men and women who may be on this line, you become a traitor to the memory of your ancestors when you allow the enemy to fill you with drugs and take away from you the power of your own mind and soul, by lacing the drugs with poison, because they don't want us to have a future. And he even went on to talk about how, you know, the young people who use drugs, or any of us using drugs, are cooperating with Satan, you know, who wants to destroy the black community, you know, when we're using drugs. And you know, that's kind of me paraphrasing it. But the point is what we want to talk about, because I thought that was so important when he talked about the ancestors and how, you know, our whole struggle. And we know that these drugs, battling against this drug addiction is an issue. But
He laid it out there. And so, Sister Mavis, I thought that was, you know, that was our topic. Brother K. Reno, I know you see in these, you know, in these communities and some of these venues and some of our neighborhoods, you know, what the minister is saying is true regarding substance abuse. So, Sister Mavis, I wanted to first start off by saying, how prevalent is the problem? What are we seeing out here? I mean, I have some stats, of course. I know even with the Parchman prison story last week, you saw drugs in the jail. The jail was filled with drugs. They piping them drugs into the jails. You know, they 2018 stats talk about illicit drugs combined, 53.2 million, marijuana, 43.5 million, you know, prescription drugs, tranquilizers, cocaine, codeine, you know, the whole thing, meth, heroin, fentanyl. You know, we know the story, because anytime our minister tells us it's a problem, then it's really, we know it's a problem. So, Mavis.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. First of all, let me commend Brother K. Reno. He knows I'm one of his biggest fans, and he's like a son to me. And I see him doing such good work in our community with the organizations, the LOC, and supporting what the message is from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so I want to commend him for everything that he has done and is doing, and that I know he will continue to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sis. I appreciate that love. And, you know, I reciprocate those feelings back to you. You know, it's always love
Yes, sir. And in response to your question, Sister Pam, you have some stats you just said. I think you said 2018. Well, let me give you some more current stats. They may not be in numbers and percentages, but I just recently completed an assignment at Harris County Jail.
I can
tell you from firsthand experience, firsthand knowledge, that there are drugs in there. There is one floor of that jail where you can smell nothing but. And so, you know, when I first was made aware of it, I'm like, well, what are the employees doing? Just standing by it? Well, guess what? It's by design. It, you know, I said the employees probably feel like they need to keep them using drugs, so they can keep them in jail, so they can keep a job. I mean, there's got to be some kind of rationale, which is not sane rationale to me. But yes, ma'am, they are definitely in there. And before I worked there, I was not totally aware of that, you know, fact. I had heard it, you know, but I witnessed it, and it's really, it's an oxymoron to me, because you are incarcerated because of drugs, but then they allow drugs to come into the jail. It just doesn't make any sense. So as far as practicing what you preach, it's not being done. It's not being done. The system is has failed and continues to, but that's the way they set it up. You know, they set it up to do that with certain people, and they keep it full according to the design that they have created. And thank you for quoting what the minister said to the children, to the youth, because it's so important that we get this message and information to our youth. I have told clients in the past that I want to catch you before you have to sit in my office at a treatment program or at the jail. Let me give you some information and help you gain some knowledge so so you won't, that won't be the end result. But when he said that they would be a traitor to the memory of their ancestors, what came to me was that first and foremost, they're being a traitor to themselves.
Yes, ma'am.
Because so many times individuals will say, well, I ain't hurt nobody. You know, I ain't hurt nobody. Yeah, well, first and foremost, you're hurting yourself. And you're hurting anyone that cares about you. Whoever cares about you and know the situation with you, they're being hurt as well. But they're being a traitor to themselves and just giving away the power of their own mind and soul. So, of course, there's nothing that the minister says that is not on point and is not the truth. And so on any given topic, he talks about what he knows is an important message. But the current condition of drugs in our community is by design, is not by accident. It was set up that way when they first started bringing drugs into this country. And that's just the way they have it set up. And that's because they have no respect for us and, you know, called us three-fifths of a human being.
That's right.
You know,
yes,
not three-fifths of a human. And so, you know, they don't care what they do to us or how they treat us, what they tell us. And so it's by design. It's not an accident. And the prison industrial system is part of the design. It's part of the design.
Yes, ma'am. That's so beautiful because I know going back to what Brother K. Reno said earlier about recognizing his purpose or hearing the minister talk about the purpose. And as you say, the drugs affect us in a way, you know, because I'm not going to just talk about the youth on drugs. It's many of us, you know, have been down that path. Like the minister said, the black community is filled with drugs. So are we not being able to realize our purpose when our minds are polluted with drugs and our ancestors died and were murdered and were lynched and we sitting here high because we potentially can't deal with problems? I mean, you know, he used the word traitor. So I thought that was really interesting. Brother K. Reno, you can jump in at any time. You know, the targeting that Sister Mavis brought up, it reminds me of your rap video that you did. And I think, what was that, the meeting? Was it called The Meeting? And talk to us about that video. It was, if you don't mind, or I can describe.
Yes, ma'am. No, I mean, it was right on point what Sister Mavis was saying. I think about just the whole premise of they recognize who we are even when we don't. So if there's somebody, it would be like if a thief was trying to steal some money, if they knew that you had a winning lottery ticket or something, but you didn't know that your ticket had won, and they could switch your ticket out with theirs. That's what they would do, and you would never know. So they understood that you had won, but that's just like with us. They know that we God's chosen people. They get that, but a lot of us don't know because at the root of it, they stripped us of that knowledge. They took everything that we were in the beginning, and they robbed us of that. So when it comes down to keeping us on drugs, keeping us deaf, dumb, and blind, putting guns into the community, all of the different things that they do, as Sister Mavis mentioned, by design, that's absolutely what it is. So the thing that has to happen, we have to recognize that something is being done to us. And if we don't recognize that something is being done to us, we just hanging around the hood just feeling like, well, you know, This is who we are. This is how our life is. I've heard people say that before. You know, we just
yes,
inward. This is how it is for us because we just inward. That's who we are. You know. But the speak on the song, The Meeting. It goes back to what we were speaking about earlier in terms of how the entertainment industry they will bring you in. They'll allow you in. They'll accept you in, but you have to come in under their terms. You have to be willing to say and do the things that they want you to say and do in order to fit their agenda. And if you step outside of the lines of that, then now you have to be dealt with, and they have multiple ways to deal with you. The first way is just to threaten you, to say, man, look, hey, you said what you said. We need you to clean that up and apologize. If you go beyond that and decide that you're not going to do that, then they remove you, like, okay, well, you're going to lose your deal. You're going to lose your contract, whatever the case may be. And then if you keep going after that, then eventually they find a way to physically remove you. And they're so meticulous and scientific in the way that they do it. It's like the CIA dealing with world leaders. They kill and assassinate leaders in ways that the people don't even understand that it was an assassination. You know, they can poison you in such a slick way that you don't even, that the people don't even recognize. So it's the same thing. They do that to our communities when they put these drugs in the communities, and then they figure out ways to weaponize the music and weaponize the food and all of these different things that we fall victim to, and we just think it's just how it is, it's how it's happening, when in reality a plan and a plot has been implemented to do that, to carry that out in the first place. But if we don't know that, if we don't know that, you can't defend and fight against an enemy that you don't even know exists. You know, you think it's just we've been taught we was cursed or something along those lines, and if we don't know that we're in a war, we can't fight it.
Yes, sir. That's so important. Thank you. Because looking at the effects of the drug use, and like you say, to me, the myths, the lies that are told that make us feel like, oh, yeah, we're less than. So, you know, drugs aren't harmful and, you know, it's no big deal. This is not, marijuana is not addictive, or, you know, just some of the lies that are told. And people fail to understand that a lot of times, like a stat says, an estimated 2/3 of all instances of violence, you know, maybe interpersonal violence, are believed to be attributed to alcohol. You know, you're looking at people being under the influence at the time of committing violent crimes. According to a stat, 1/3 are believed to be under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And, you know, the people that die, and, you know, so they have drug-related crimes and categories. You got crimes related to, like, selling drugs. You got crimes related to what you'll do to get some drugs. And then you got crimes related to what happens when you're under the influence of drugs. You know, and this is really a drag on our community, not just taking away our aspiration and, like the minister said, our minds. You know, it's such a revolving door. So what you said, Brother Carino, is so important about when our people don't even realize this game. So Sister Mavis, I know we want to talk about prevention. We want to talk about how the teachings help give you a tool, perhaps, in giving people hope. You know, so we want to talk about those things, and we want to give the callers any opportunity they have to also get into this conversation by pressing the number 1 to get into the host queue. So is prevention important? You know, is prevention important, Sister Mabe? Yes.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Prevention is critically important. And that's because of the very word itself, prevention, to prevent a person from getting caught up into the addiction cycle or the cycle of substance use is important. And that prevention is a part of educating people.
Right.
That's
yes,
how prevention will happen. The people have to be educated, and the individuals have to receive the information and gain the knowledge of exactly what is what. And you made a good point a minute ago saying their favorite phrase, most people's favorite phrase, well, it's just weed, you know. It's just weed, and like it's not dangerous. However, Dr. Wesley Muhammad educated us when he informed us that they have weaponized the weed, that marijuana, and even the minister has said it in the past, that marijuana can be a helpful tool in its purest form. Because what they smoke today is not the same that was being smoked back in the 60s and the 70s. They have added to it and enhanced it to, I mean, I have never seen people I've never seen people crave marijuana like they do that they have today. They crave marijuana like people I have seen crave heroin. And that's a really hard drug, but it's what they've done to it. You see, and Brother K. Reno definitely brought up the word sciences, they get in these laboratories and they develop these designer drugs, quote unquote. And they're designed to do absolutely nothing but take a person's life. They're designed to kill a person, to rob them of any semblance of normalcy that they may have had in their lives. And then they're in there, you know, adding stuff to, just like whoever came up with synthetic marijuana is what they call it. Whoever came up with that had to be in a laboratory. And that is some stuff that people ingest and become sometimes violent and just, you know, out of their minds. I'll put it that simply, out of their minds. And so these drugs that are being developed and created, who does that? Who sits up and decides, well, I want to create something that's going to make these people, you know, go crazy or not have any, you know, any dignity, any more dignity. But we do have people that are doing that. And the use of drugs is going to lead to one of three places. That's the jails, the institutions, or death. One of three. I have seen incidences of all three of those results. All three of those places. That's because there's no good in them. There's no good in them. And so I in speaking about the drugs and the youth, it's so important that we get this message to our youth. Because for them to use marijuana or any type of substance when their minds and bodies are still underdeveloped, when they are uneducated and not guided by positive role models, they fall into that trap. They fall into the trap. And so drug education and prevention is a necessary tool to present and assist our youth with understanding. You have to help them understand. And with that being said, what worked as far as addressing substance abuse 30 years ago is not going to work with these youth today. And not just the youth, just the people. Because they've seen people go to treatment and then they get out and then they stay clean for a while and then, you know, be in recovery. And then the next thing they know, they're gone back. However, we must evolve with the time. the minister's lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done.
Mm-hmm.
The time and what must be done with this problem and issue has to evolve to meet them where they are now. We have to meet them where they are. Because if we try to bring them stuff from 30 years ago, they're going to look at us like, what? What are you talking about? And as the minister has said in one of his lectures, that's why they're not interested in school, because they're not teaching them anything worthwhile. They have not evolved that system, and they won't evolve that system because they don't want our children to be educated, to be smart anyway, but they are. And it's up to us to make sure that they understand that they are, that they understand that they have great value, like Brother K. Reno said, that they understand we are the people of God. We're the chosen people of God. And that is, you know, something that all of them don't know. Most of them don't know. But we have to evolve with the times, because what works for one as far as the education and prevention doesn't work for others. It's not one size fits all. It has to be individualized based on the individual's makeup, like their age, their background, their environment, the current, and as a child, any genetic predisposition. And what that means is genetic predisposition, okay, because so many children, they're exposed to drugs at home because their parents doing it.
Mm.
And but genetic predisposition means that just because your mother and father are drug addicts doesn't mean you're going to be one. It just means that you have you're at a greater risk of developing an addiction if you choose to experiment with drugs.
Mm.
You see, because your mother and your father are not going to make that decision for you. You're going to make that decision for yourself.
Mm.
And so it's important that they know. And the minister was talking, I was listening to one of his lectures today, and what he said about heredity can be overturned.
Mm.
It can be overturned. And so, you know, but most of the time, a lot of times, people just want somebody to blame and doesn't want to take responsibility for their choices. Because at the end of the day, you choose to do it. But with the chemicals that they have in these drugs today, you lose your ability to choose very quickly. Because once you become addicted to it, dependent on it, okay, then you don't have a choice anymore. But there's always an opportunity for you to do a U-turn. It's never too late. I have some information that I created, a content, and it's the Drug Education and Prevention Program, and the slogan is, you're never in too deep, because I want to reach those that are already doing it and let them know you can make a U-turn. You can turn it around. You don't have to stay there. It's your choice. Yes, ma'am. So it's just a lot. And but because once a person engages in substance use, they, like I said, lose their sense of choice, and then the guilt and shame will set in and keep them out there. Guilt and shame has kept more people in addiction than any other emotion, I can say. You know, guilt and remorse and shame of doing it. Yes, ma'am. A very powerful emotion that can keep a person stuck. So the goal is to reach them, but with a new paradigm shift as far as substance abuse counseling. And I have been doing it, like I said, for over 20 years, and I know all the methods and all the, you know, programs and what's been put out there. And I'm not saying that it hasn't worked. It has worked for a whole lot of people. I know people that have been, and they call it being in recovery. I know people that have been in recovery over 30 years. They put it down and have not chosen to pick it back up. However, we have to start with them where they are. We have to meet them where they are. And we have to evolve with the times. And in order for me to do that, I have to stay abreast of the information. I have to, you know, stay on top of what's out there. And I tell clients all the time, I learn just as much from you as you do from me. Because you out there in the war, and you come in and you see me and you share with me about how it is out there and what's out there. And so, just like Brother K. Reno, I thank Allah for the gift of counseling. It was a gift I didn't even know that I was blessed with until 2007. And Allah has blessed me to have some wins, but he's also blessed me to be realistic and know that they won't all be wins. They won't all be wins. And it's just a blessing. It's just a blessing to be able to, you know, help. That's like you mentioned earlier. I have a passion for helping people, and
yes,
believe with everything in me that this is my purpose, because
beautiful.
It is something that our community must heal from. A healing has to take place, and in order for that to take place, we have to disseminate the information. We have to be patient and give our people what they really need to help them.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to take a caller, and then we'll come right back. We have Sister Ula, and Sister Ula has a comment. Let me open up her mic. Sister Ula. Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
Wa alaikum salam.
I was wondering if you could hear me because I was having phone difficulty. I was going to add something to the list of drugs. Me and a friend have did a lot of research on this COVID-19 vaccine, and we have there were over, I think they said 60,000 professionals who did what they call a protest against it, and also the fact that it contains something known as graphene oxide, which is the same chemical compound they give people when they give them a lethal injection. This is what that's why after they take so much of it, they're gone. You know?
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Yeah, and then listen to researchers they were talking about this vaccine and how it's connected to Bill Gates' cloud computer system and the 5G network, so that people become robots. And I've studied people who've been vaccinated from a distance. I don't let them in the house and I don't visit with them, but I've noticed that they think everything that Satan or the enemy wants them to think. They'll turn their own people in, and you're seeing all these wild, violent, like that guy in New York that killed all those people. And they're not going to tell you you've been vaccinated, but from my study, that's what it sounded like. Thank you for letting me share. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Ula. Thank you for that comment. Because we're talking, you know, prescription drugs is just as deadly in a lot of ways. We have that in our depopulation agenda section of the final call. So as always, we advise everybody to read and stay abreast of what the final call is providing us with in terms of information on the vaccine and the mask and the shots and, you know, just all of that. So thank you so much, Sister Ula. And, you know, Brother K. Reno, I don't know if you wanted to chime in with some of what Sister Mavis was saying, because I think it's so important how she talked about the dissemination of information, you know, the healing that needs to happen in our community, potentially how can we serve our people better because I think one of the points that you brought up that I just think is so important is how our community has to raise our standards of who, how we value ourselves, what we allow. You know, sometimes drug addiction is just looked at and we turn our eyes, we accept it. You know, we think it's okay, you know, to function on that low, unfortunately, level. And I'm not saying it negative because I've had family members to become addicted and to perish even from it. But, you know, all the time, and that's why I thought this conversation was so important, because people be dancing their way to the grave. You know, people, it's almost like suicide. And it, you know, we're now becoming more depressed. Final Call article by Sister Nisa talks about the growing problem of drug overdoses. I wanted to put that back out at you and see if you could give us any of your wisdom on what we're seeing. And of course, you know, we know that the weaponized hip hop is sometimes pushing this drug abuse, drug usage. So we've got issues.
Yes, ma'am. Well, yeah. It's about, we talk about prevention. One of the main keys to prevention is pre-education. It's just letting our young people know way in advance, not just about the drug, but about who they are in terms of their vessel and the value of their vessel and how that drug has no business being a part of being inside of our vessel. It's so beneath us to even put that in our systems. So we got to make our young people and our older people to know who we are. You know, if we talk about Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that the black man and woman is God, then we have to focus on that and let them know, hey, look, you don't put this in the system of God. You don't inject this into the body of God. And just that basic level, just on that level of understanding should be, I would say should be enough, because sometimes our condition plays into how we react to things as well. And so a lot of our brothers and sisters, drugs is an escape, or what they believe to be an escape from whatever's going on in real life. So the only relief that they get to feel, or the only relief that the so-called relief that they think they're experiencing is through this drug, through this alcohol, and like you said, Sister Pam, even through the music, because the music has now been turned into a drug because of the content that's in some of the music. So if this devil has caused us as artists to push his motive and push his agenda through our art, then now he got us working on autopilot. He got us just doing what we do, and all he has to do is sit back and let it take hold, because we'll make a song talking about popping Molly. We'll make a song talking about sipping drink. We'll make a song back in the days talking about smoking fry, you know, smoking wet, whatever it is, and we do these things on autopilot now. And the more popular that the song is, the more appealing it becomes, and then the more curiosity that sparks up in the young person or the older person, because I ain't just putting it on the young people, that curiosity to see, well, man, what is this drug all about? I love the song, so let me see what this drug is all about. And so we have to educate each other on just that process and on the history. Because long before a lot of these new drugs were released, you know, among our people, it was other things that they had. We can remember the days when we would talk about how only in the hood you would see malt liquor in the corner stores. You know, you'd go to other neighborhoods, you'd go to white neighborhoods, and they didn't sell 40-ounce Old English and, you know, mountain liquor and things of that nature. And there are certain other things that they would sell in our neighborhoods that they wouldn't do. So this all points right back to the design and the intentions of it all. you know, and it's and it's from the government on down. So I don't think that our young people are not intelligent enough to be taught that history in a way that they can understand it. You know, I don't care if he's 7 years old, five, six, seven, 8 years old. If we could see our young people at 2 and 3 years old can pull out an iPhone and know how to work it and go through all the steps to get to certain videos and certain sites,
right.
Then they have more than enough understanding to be taught this history. And I just believe that just being from the hood, if you find out in advance that somebody is trying to run a scam on you, if you find out in advance that somebody is trying to do something dirty to you, then you're going to not let that happen. So what happened to us, we were done dirty, but we didn't really understand that it was a plot to do us dirty. So we got to teach our young people early, look, man, it's an enemy out there that's trying to take you out. So the question now is, are you going to allow yourself to fall victim to this plot that we clearly explain and is showing to you? You know, we can go all the way back to the CIA with the crack and the guns and all these things. We go all the way back to Nixon's war on his quote unquote war on drugs and the quotes that came from people that worked in his administration that said that the war on drugs was really not a war on drugs. It was a trick, it was a scam. So it's all kind of things that we can educate ourselves and our young people about, and then after that we gotta let the chips fall where they may. Then hopefully they'll make the right decisions. But last point, we have to change. We have to change and fix the conditions of our community as well, because again, people do drugs as a result of their pain, you know. And everywhere we look around, if we see all this tragedy going on in our hoods and our communities, then just they want an escape, and they're going to find it one way or the other. And the alternative that they're using as an escape is not one that's going to be beneficial to us, and it's not one that's going to it's going to be one that perpetuates what they would call a generational curse, when really it was just something that was imposed on us.
Beautiful. We have a question. We have a sister. Let's see, Sister Sylvia Muhammad. Sister Sylvia.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow, alaikum salam, ma'am.
Alaikum salam.
I wanted to ask, in reference to counselors, how I'd like for, if possible, to speak upon the importance of counselors in school, because I really didn't get a lot of counseling. It's like I just got... and even though it was years ago, I don't know how much changed. I just got, like, pushed into classes that were open or something like that. It's not like I was given directions, and I think a lot of us as parents might not even know, because we got whatever we got as opposed to people giving us choices. And can you speak about the counselors in that fashion, too?
Okay. Yes, ma'am. I can. And that's a very good question. That's an excellent question and topic that you brought up, because it takes me back to when I applied for a counseling job in one of the school districts. And because I was a substance abuse, I'm primarily an LCDC, a chemical dependency counselor. One of the employees there that I knew very well told me that they're not going to hire you, because for them to hire you is for them to admit that there's a problem. And so the need for substance abuse counseling and substance abuse education and prevention classes for the students as well as parents is critical.
Yes.
The need is critical. However, they... Again, in that system, the way it's designed, you don't find that. The only counselors that I know of that school districts will hire are those that, like, are social workers. But when you specify you know, that the issue or that the direction will be in addressing substance use or substance use, they shy away from it. They shy away from it. And that person made perfectly good sense when she said for them to hire you is for them to admit that there's a problem. That's why we have to not depend on them to get our communities educated.
Yeah, that's right.
We have to go in ourselves. And, you know, I thank you for sharing your experience with that, because I'm sure many parents have had that experience in their, you know, with not being informed. And therefore, if the parents aren't informed, they can't inform the children. So the children can make an informed decision, you know, because that's the way it's designed. However, we are on the path, and with the help of Allah, we will make our communities a safe and decent place to live. We will get our children educated, our youth. And Kay Reno made a good point. You start at 7 years old. As soon as they, because you see them with these electronics, and if they are intelligent enough to learn that, they're intelligent enough to learn how to save their lives.
That's right.
Because when you put it to them like that, this will save your life. Okay? You want to live, don't you? Yes, ma'am. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this will save your life, and that will take your life. So I was recently contacted by someone that was referred to me, and she's a single mother, and she has children, and is seeking assistance and counseling. And it warms my heart. I mean, I sing praises to Allah anytime someone contacts me, because that is the most important, that's the first and most important step, you know. People have to want it, and in order to help them get there, we provide information, information, and information.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful.
Did that answer your question? I hope that answers it. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling in and presenting it.
And thank you for the show. And I love both elevated places.
Oh, praises due to Allah. Thank you, Sister Sylvia, for calling and listening. We love you too. Yes, ma'am. And then we have Sister Marguerite. She has a comment. Sister Marguerite, let me go ahead and open up your mic. Sister Marguerite.
Salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Marguerite.
Salam alaikum, brothers and sisters, and Eid Mubarak. I am certainly enjoying this conversation. And I have a question, I think, too. But something the sister said earlier about the hatred of these people for us. And the Quran, in my Quranic reading, we came across, you know, Surah 3, I think it starts at 117, where it talks about they hate to see you happy. It grieves them to see you happy, and what they have in their hearts is greater still. So she reminded me of that when she talked about the things that they have plotted and planned for us. And the one thing that also gets me, I'm an avid researcher and a bookaholic, and I came across the book called Chaos. And it was a time when I was, young and coming up and living in Hollywood and during the Charles Manson murders and, you know, the Flower Children and all that, to find out that the CIA was not only behind Charles Manson and those murders, but because their white youth were waking up, the CIA did to them back then what they're doing to us now. And so get a lot of murders among musicians and artists back then, Jimi Hendrix, you know, and others like him, Janis Joplin, who were waking up. So if they will do that to their own, in order to keep white supremacy reigning. So it should not be surprising to us what they will do and to what degree they will go to keep our people from rising. And I thank you for taking my call, Sister Pamela.
Well, thank you. And Sister Marguerite, you're so correct. I think that's an excellent resource book. Like you say, it's called Chaos, and it's just filled with a lot of interesting information and research about what the CIA did participate in. So thank you for sharing that with us. Yes, ma'am. I think the thing that Sister Marguerite was sharing about where we are today with this struggle, it reminds me of another article that I just loved that was in the final call last week by the minister, and it was talking about faith. And one of the things the minister really brought out in that article is, you know, faith is the substance of things hoped for. And he talked about what is hope. He said, I'm expecting something. You know, he said, I don't see it yet, but I'm full of expectation. He said, that's hope. You know, the evidence of what I hope for is not yet seen. And so when I think of drug usage and Brother K. Reno, you know, you're operating on such a high value self, you know, knowing your value, knowing who you are. And so, you know, I think the healing, you know, we got to get out here and help these children to understand and have some hope and have some, you know, belief, because the world they live in is just, you know, kind of really doesn't have that. That was one of the things I wanted to say. And then the other thing I want to throw out here is this. As we talk about the older artists and people who used to die of overdoses, and we'd see them, you know, be Richard Pryor, who, you know, was on fire, you know, and others back in the day, like, I was afraid to really get involved with crack cocaine because I did see the results. And I think my point is that integration has shielded us from some of what is really going on. Our children, sometimes they're sold these false hopes and false dreams. They really don't know about struggle. And so does anybody, you know, I just threw those two things out there, the fact that we need to teach hope and the fact and faith, and also how integration is putting blinders on our people, you know, about how drugs will result in failure if you go down these paths.
Yes, ma'am. I think that's where the teaching of history comes into play as well, because if we teach our children and adults the history of a lot that went on in America. And like the sister who called in was talking about how so many connections to the CIA and to the government and their role in destroying us or attempting to destroy us, all that plays into the learning of history. And at the root of all of these situations, anything, we on substance abuse tonight, but we can go into 20 different other subjects, and at the root of them, you're going to find the same enemy who is the cause of it. So when we learn that history, then we say, okay, you know what? There's a common denominator. There's a common enemy that's been constantly having their foot on the gas in terms of trying to wipe us out. The depopulation agenda, that's a real thing. And you hear a lot of young people starting to kind of wake up and gain a little understanding of it, but maybe not the true depths of it in terms of how many different categories of life that depopulation agenda is operating in. You know, we can look at the drugs, but we also got to look at the food. We also got to look at the water. We got to look at the very air that we breathe. We got to look at the music. They have implemented it in every form, the vaccines, all these different things. So when we learn who we're dealing with, then I think that'll raise our antennas up to say anything that's presented to us as being something that, hey, well, this is the next step. This is what you need. This is what we need to do. This is what we're going to automatically look at it from an angle of scrutinization, heavy, like, oh, no. You know, we already like that. But we got to get our people like that to say, whatever they present, I'm going the opposite direction. You know, so we just got to be taught that, and that got to be force fed into our consciousness, because we have been made too trusting to the very people that are the last people we need to be trusting in the first place.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, because it's so normalized, you know, when you think about it, again, we're talking about, you know, I'm in the law. I do legal. And so when we talk about drug testing, for example, I mean, drug testing is so normalized that people think it's okay, you know, to have to go through a drug test, because if you're using drugs, then you just have to be clean for the drug test as opposed to just being clean. You know, we talk about some of the injustices that people who, like, I know there's a story out of Mississippi where a young woman, unfortunately, she had had a felony maybe 20 years ago, and then she committed a drug offense, you know, after she had served her time, she's out, she's productive, a drug offense. They sent her back to prison for life. And, wow. You know, that is a horrible, horrible outcome. Like Sister Mavis said, you got drugs in the prison. You got judges and lawyers using more drugs than anything. You know, that used to be my thing, I have to be honest. You know, coming out of law school, I couldn't even see how these same people I went to law school with who were using many drugs were now the ones administering the punishment. So there was a lot of hypocrisy. But the point is, we're taught in the nation to just not use drugs. And that really does, that's really the solution, if that makes sense. You know, because then, and I want to throw it out there too, another myth, and I think our children are kind of gullible on this one, is this myth that, oh, drugs are okay because everybody uses drugs. And everybody doesn't use drugs. You know, this enemy got us thinking that you got to be cool. You know, drugs are cool. So I don't know. I threw that out there. But Sister Mavis, we're kind of down to the last portions of the show, but please share. Got about 15 minutes
yes,
left.
Ma'am. That,
yes, ma'am.
You just brought out some very good points. You just brought out some very pertinent points, as well as Brother K. Reno, because it is important that our youth and our children and our adults be taught of the truth, which we are taught, of who we're dealing with and who is out to get us and what they're doing and what their plan is. And it's important for them to understand this so that they can know what kind of war we're fighting, what kind of war we are in. And you mentioned about struggle. And I have the CD set from Minister Farrakhan, his lecture series from 1984 called Living the Struggles of Life. And how God made us to endure struggle. He made us.
Right.
That's why we have the scripture in the Quran about after difficulty comes ease. We're going to be tried. We're going to be tried. However, developing coping skills, having a positive peer group, and increasing positive self-esteem are all tools that can help to overcome the struggles. And there's a saying in the recovery community, there is no struggle in surrender. It's just that so many of us don't understand that surrendering does not mean weakness. Surrendering means wisdom. Because you have to develop the will and it has to be developed. It has to be developed because our have not
been allowed the opportunity to develop these characteristics.
Okay.
And so the importance of identifying your self-worth and have the willingness to be guided on how to live sober. I have a series of articles, and that I did for an online magazine at one point, and the title is The Art of Living Sober. But, okay, Reno, you can relate to an art. You're an artist, but there's an art to living sober. And just like you have to follow the instructions or the guidelines for any other art, it's important to learn and get in the habit of following the guidelines for living sober. And I'll never forget that I was reading the other book, and that sometimes will refer you to the bottom of the page for a definition, and the word sober was in there, and it referred me to the bottom of the page for a definition, and the definition was the word responsible.
Many
times people see living sober as not using drugs and alcohol. No, living sober is living responsibly. And the point being, if you're using drugs and alcohol, then you most likely are not living responsibly.
That's right.
And so living responsibly is, you know, something that I believe we all want. I believe our people want that. But they have been fooled into believing that they can't do it. And, you know, you brought up a good point about faith and the substance.
Yes,
and today I heard the minister's lecture. I heard his lecture on fear, faith, and truth.
Right.
And he said fear is a test of your faith. And so many times we face a fear and back down from it. And like he teaches, when you back down from it, then it will overcome you. But if you stand up on what you know to be the truth, then it won't. It's so important that parents, because I thought about, you know, parents and what they can do and what they can't do, and to fight against peer pressure. Well, guess what? they don't need to compete. They just need to override it, because as parents, they do have that power.
That's right.
They have it. They have it. And if they exercise it, I'm sure that the children would respect that.
Mm.
A lot of times we find parents that want to be friends with their children more than a parent. That's sometimes a huge mistake, most times.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start to communicate with me and hang out with me and, you know, like we friends, then that's how I'm going to start looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure that the roles are clear and that the understanding is there and that the knowledge is shared with everybody involved. Because if one person in the household gets help and all the others in the household need help but didn't get it, then you still have an imbalance in the household. If that makes sense.
Yes,
you still have an imbalance because you've only got one person that has chosen a different path. And it's important that we ensure that they can be on the same page with other family members. If there are other issues, of course there are other issues. Anger issues. okay?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And family issues that we're gonna be tried on a daily basis. We're gonna have struggles, but once they are taught and understand that we have the ability to overcome whatever struggles we face, then they have a fighting chance. They have a fighting chance.
Yes, ma'am. No, that's beautiful. Because as you were talking, and we're really out at the end, but as you were saying, I'm thinking when people are in jails and you're communicating with them in those situations, they're not using drugs anymore because most of the time you're incarcerated, you can't use, and you function fine. And so it's like, what are people saying, you know, when I get out, I can do better, you know, but don't put yourself in that situation to be able to do better. You know, don't have to have somebody incarcerating you, taking your freedom, you know, and taking everything you have before you can exercise that faith and that strength and fighting those demons that you know, we have. So yeah,
yes,
I think that's beautiful.
Yes,
and we have a history of in the nation. I know as we were talking about the targeting of our people with drugs in the 90s and the 80s, and we know the dope busters went into the different neighborhoods and were able to reduce the drugs and the crime. And so with these teachings, I have hope. You know, I just really thank you all for coming on and helping me, you know, discuss it and start trying to get another message out, you know, giving it our second, third, and fourth, and fifth win to make sure we educate our people. Sister Mavis, can you please tell people how they can get in contact with you?
Yes, ma'am. I can be reached. My direct number is 832-453-3255, and my Facebook page is, I have an Overcomers Foundation Facebook page. And I also have a Mavis Muhammad Facebook page. On Twitter, I am at Miss Mavis 09. I don't do Instagram. So
okay.
That's my social media presence. But again, I am in the process of developing, and inshallah will launch in a couple of weeks my Overcomers Life Solutions. And that name came up and was approved by the grace of Allah. I know to take off any barriers to people coming for help from me, because it's not just about drugs and alcohol. It's about life. It's about life.
Ma'am.
I may go in to a client and we start off talking about substance use, but it ends up being all about all the areas of their lives.
Yes,
because
ma'am.
It's going to affect them. But yes, ma'am.
All right.
And so that's
Sister
how
Mavis.
I can be removed.
Yes, ma'am. Let me give Brother K. Reno. Brother K. Reno, did you want to tell us about a project or how we can reach you, just the things I said at the beginning, the real
yes,
K. Reno?
I can be reached on Twitter at The Real K. Reno, and my YouTube channel is the same, The Real K. Reno. You can subscribe to the channel and just hear the content every single day.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And so I just want to close out and thank you all for listening to the Elevated Places Network Presents a Time for Justice. I would like to thank Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, the Elevated Places Network team, Sister Samaya Muhammad, Brother Terrence, Sister Donna. I would like to thank you all for listening. And please tune in to Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad on the Elevated Places on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you once again for listening, and please tune in next week for more informative discussions. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you all.
Wa alaikum
salam. Hey, Reno and Sister Mavis, I'm sorry. I just want to thank you all once again for joining us tonight, and I will also say again, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
salam. Wa alaikum salam, and thank you for having me.
Thank you.